From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Thursday, March 1st, 2018. And on this day, some of Maine's rural communities consider placing a police officer inside schools and an effort to keep federal tax reform from raising state taxes. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org. And by Lee Auto Malls, 4 generations serving Mainers since 1936, 19 Maine locations, and at leeauto.com.
First tonight, a woman charged in the death of her 10-year-old daughter is pregnant. As Patty White reports, Sharon Carrillo also has 2 other young children who are already in state custody.
The attorney representing Sharon Carrillo's husband, Julio Carrillo, says that his client confirmed that Sharon is 7 months pregnant. It's unclear who will take custody of the baby once it's born. In Waldo County Superior Court on Wednesday, a judge granted the state's request that the Carrillos be barred from contact with children under age 15. 10-year-old Marissa Kennedy, the daughter of Sharon and stepdaughter of Julio, was found dead in their Stockton Springs condo last Sunday. A state medical examiner determined the girl died from battered child syndrome. Though both Carrillos admitted to beating the girl, Sharon Carrillo's attorney, Chris McLean, says his client was also likely the victim of abuse. The couple is each being held on $500,000 bond. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
Tonight, the RSU 13 school board in Rockland will vote on whether to authorize the superintendent to negotiate a school resource officer position, or SRO. That's a police officer who patrols and works inside schools. Rockland's been working on its proposal for several years now, but the idea has recently been floated at other rural schools as well. As Jennifer Mitchell reports, the prospect of school shootings and other problems is forcing the issue onto local agendas.
SROs have been in place for years at some of Maine's bigger districts, Bangor, Portland, and Hamden, to name a few. But more rural towns are also considering them as a way to help deal with a number of problems.
So we have a fair amount of issues. Substance abuse, split families, generational poverty, and so on.
And RSU 13 Superintendent John McDonald says the district is taking a multi-pronged approach in confronting those problems, including the recent hire of 3 more social workers.
We really view the SRO not as a security guard for the school, but as a member of the community and actually serving sort of an educational function as well.
But it was last month's deadly school shooting in Florida that's brought the prospect of hiring an SRO closer to the top of other local agendas. Lincoln Public Safety Director Daniel Summers says he was invited to a meeting on Tuesday to discuss the issue with Lincoln school staff. He says it's still early days, but he favors the idea, even as rural police departments like his grapple with understaffing and slim budgets. Currently, Summers operates on what he calls minimum staff, with 5 officers to patrol the town of 5,000 along with the surrounding rural areas.
When you have an incident like the Parkland incident in Florida, you sort of have to prioritize now. What are we talking about? We're living in a different time, and we need to take steps, and it may cost a little bit of money, but we need to take a look at it. We have to.
But SROs have been the subject of some controversy. Studies have suggested that police presence in a school setting puts more students on a criminal fast track, minority students especially, by channeling them into the juvenile justice system for offenses which at one time would have been handled by the principal and parents. And as other critics have pointed out, an SRO was present at the time of the Parkland shooting, but that did nothing to prevent the 17 fatalities and 14 injuries that occurred there. Summers cautions that an SRO is not going to be a cure-all, especially since an officer's time is almost always spread thinly across several schools.
Having a school resource officer tells me one thing, and it tells me that at least the communities are trying to do something to mitigate the risks. Is it going to be foolproof? Well, I'm not going to be making that promise. I can't make that promise.
In Rockland, Superintendent John McDonald says there will be many more meetings and discussions before any position is given a green light. Among the hurdles would be funding. He says the current plan is to apply for federal grant money, which would pay 75% of the SRO's salary. The remaining 25%, he says, would ideally be split between the city and the school district budget. Other communities discussing a possible SRO position include RSU 39, which encompasses schools in Caribou, Limestone, and Stockholm, as well as AOS 47, which includes Orrington and Dedham. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Jennifer Mitchell.
You may have heard that Maine's revenues are now projected to be much higher than the state had anticipated. And now Governor Paula Page wants to use part of that money to pay for more tax cuts. That proposal is part of a bill that would make sure Maine tax laws are consistent with changes in the federal tax code enacted in December. Mal Leary has that.
Governor LePage has been working to reduce state taxes since he took office and has had some significant successes. As he enters his final year of office, he wants to further that effort. LePage is proposing to use about $90 million in unanticipated state revenues to pay for an increase in the tax credit for families with children. He wants to include that provision in the tax conformity bill that many lawmakers thought would be revenue neutral or close to it. House Democrat Drew Gattine of Westbrook, who co-chairs the Appropriations Committee, says it's anything but.
This was far from a revenue neutral proposal. This goes far beyond simply conforming with the new federal tax code in a revenue-neutral way.
The state piggybacks its income tax on the federal code because supporters say it is more efficient to rely on IRS auditors to check tax returns instead of hiring state staff. That practice would continue under the LePage proposal. But the goal is also to cut taxes for Maine people. Representative Jeff Timberlake, a Republican from Turner, says the governor's being consistent in his views on taxes.
As I listen to this and understand it, I mean, I think that the administration looks at it a little bit like I look at it, that this isn't my money, this is the taxpayers' money.
Finance Commissioner Alec Porteous says the governor looks at the revenues that are coming in over estimates, not as a windfall to be spent on new programs, but as an over-collection that should be returned to the taxpayers.
Return surplus tax revenues to Maine families and continue to shape a tax structure that incentivizes individuals and businesses to reside and invest in our state.
Several Democrats on the Taxation and Appropriations Committees raise questions about specific tax provisions, signaling that they may face difficulty when the bill goes before the Taxation Committee. For example, LePage proposes a further reduction in the estate tax, an additional $22 million tax break for those that inherit large estates. That will have to be paid for. And Gattine says there are many other demands on the additional expected revenue that lawmakers may want to consider before supporting another state tax cut.
Including services for people with disabilities, services for our seniors who want to stay at home, and investments in healthcare that need to be funded.
The proposal has yet to be printed and scheduled for public hearing. With so many tax issues facing changes, it's likely to be a lengthy hearing. And the legislature is supposed to end this session on April 18th. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
Democrats on the legislature's Labor Committee have voted to block Governor Paula Page's nominee to lead the Maine State Housing Authority. Steve Missler has details.
All seven Democrats voted to reject the appointment of George Gervais to an agency that provides low-interest loans to first-time homebuyers and administers heating assistance programs. Gervais currently serves as the governor's economic development chief. In his past interactions with the Labor Committee, or in some instances, a lack of them, appeared to play a role in Democrats' decision to oppose his nomination. Some raised questions about tax liens against Gervais stemming from unsuccessful business ventures. Several groups and individuals testified in support of him, including the Maine State Chamber of Commerce and former Democratic Governor John Baldacci. His supporters argued that he was constrained from being more forthcoming with the committee in the past by the governor, who has put other cabinet members on a tight leash when interacting with the legislature. The governor will now have to nominate someone else to lead the housing authority. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
And finally today, a Superior Court judge has found that a Native American employee of Day's Jewelers was subject to a hostile work environment because of his race during the many years he worked there. But as Susan Sharon reports, the judge dismissed several other related claims, saying they were not the result of race-based harassment.
Jason Brown worked for Day's Jewelers in Maine for close to 7 years in several different jobs. In an interview with Maine Public Radio in 2015, he said his boss routinely called him Big Indian, made wisecracks about Indians and firewater, used the N-word in front of his coworkers, and once told a non-Native employee with a long black braid that she looked like a squaw. He said he was also subjected to offensive images. In her 10-page decision, Justice Michaela Murphy concluded that Brown was subjected to unwelcome harassment based on race, but she could not find that the defendant's conduct constituted malicious intent, as defined by the Maine Human Rights Act.
What Justice Murphy found is that they did not recognize how problematic their behaviors were.
Eric Maynard is an attorney for Jason Brown. He said that during a 2-day trial last October, the court heard from an expert on the negative effects of stereotypes used against African Americans and Native Americans and how they can create lasting harm to self-esteem. After his testimony, two company officials testified that they then understood how the behavior taking place at the store would be offensive.
I think that with that finding, that it was probably appropriate for Justice Murphy to find that there wasn't any malicious intent.
Justice Murphy also did not find that Brown's departure from the company was the result of harassment. She declined to award back pay or punitive damages, but she did grant him $40,000 in damages for emotional pain and suffering. It's unclear whether her judgment will be appealed. An attorney for Day's Jewelers was unavailable for comment. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Thursday, March 1st, 2018. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty.